over the Chesterfield Bridge. That's the view that it's going to affect. You're not looking at the Hastings view. So this is the area that we're talking about. This is within Hiramana. And this is my great-great-grandfather, the man who commissioned the carvings to be done. He was fully tattooed. Well, he stopped when he became a Christian, didn't do any more. And we don't know when he's born. But he bridges that time between no Pākehā and then Pākehā settlers. So he took place in many battles. He was celebrated and became a member of the House of Representatives, the second one here, representing Eastern Māori, which he held for 8 years and died in office. He had three brothers. They all became significant, and I'm very proud of him. This was the area he knew, and this is recorded as an unknown meeting house, but I've done a bit of digging here, and this figure that sits at the front, I've blown up, and this piece is in family's possession now, so I can identify that as coming from us quite readily. I talked to the very informed historian Roger Nish about this, and he accepted my theory on this. These carvings here are done by Ngāti Pikiao. And in Kahanunu, we're not carvers. We never were. We imported people from other tribes to carve for us. This is deserted at this stage, and you can see this picket fence around it and gum trees. So we put this in the 1880s. Well, there were carvings done. This was a very energetic man called Augustus Hamilton, who arrived here in the 1870s. And he was interested in history, he was interested in ferns, he was interested in photography, and he was very energetic. My friend Elizabeth Beshef did her master's on him. So Augustus got himself involved with these carvings. He's a photographer, so he takes them front and back. But I'll just tell you a little bit about these ones. This one here is his back view, but it's front view here. This is in Otago Museum now. This is in Napier, now on display. Now, Hamilton is sitting here in Hastings. His father was one of the first doctors in Hastings. And Dr. Hocken had got himself up here when Karaitiana died and went to the Tangi, which was quite unusual, and wrote an account of it. Hocken was another enthusiastic man. He's very little, very short, and very enthusiastic. And he wanted to collect everything. He collected maps, books, anything he could think of. And he wanted these carvings. So he talked to Hamilton, and he lured Hamilton to get them brought down to Otago, and then he managed to buy them. And in doing so, he also gave Augustus Hamilton a job. He became the registrar of Otago Museum. Hocken loved everything, and he gave all his collection to the Otago University. As you know, there's now his own museum. But at the time his collection was housed in the annex, Hocken had bought 61 carvings. Look at the wallpaper, they're lining these walls. And just to tell you a little bit, these ones here, 5 metres tall, made of Tortora, thick, thick. And Augustus Hamilton, Hocken's died, Augustus Hamilton, they're sort of flower arranging. In 1906 we see them again. And they go down to the Christchurch Exposition, which is what followed the New Zealand South Sea Exhibition. And my family sent other carvings down there. But I don't know who those men are, non-entities in my opinion. So here they are again. They lined the walls of that exposition. This one is Whakatūra, and he's in my possession. So if people come to my house, they see him. You're all welcome. It's quite interesting here because he's actually got hair. If you look carefully, they've put hair on him, and he has an earring. Yesterday he got an earring again, a special treat. This is another academic from Otago, Henry Skinner. He took over the director of the Otago Museum, and he was an ethnologist, very clever man, and in fact, the annex is now named after him as the Skinner Annex. But under his watch, some things happened. The exchanges started, the swapping. St. Louis got two, Australian Museum, in 1921 actually. South Australia and Adelaide, they got two. These are large, these are like 6 to 8 feet high. I'm coming back to Augustus because he's always important in all of this. Because Augustus, having got to Otago and been an energetic man, he got himself then to run the Dominion Museum. He was at the Colonial, became director of the Dominion Museum. I think he lived next door to Alexander Turnbull, and you can imagine them walking up and down the terrace, planning and plotting their lives. Augustus Hamilton was very artistic, so he did a lot of artistic arrangements at the Tāonga, but there's one there and there's another one up there. And Hocken had let him keep four or five of them for himself. After his death, he gave them to what is now Te Papa. And this was his favourite one, and it is magnificent. It's just lovely. So you see, we have two figures, the finest of carving. The father's at the bottom, and the son stands on his shoulders. Now, I can't interpret all of these. I know little bits. The carver is Hoani Ngātoto from Ngāti Porou. In 1989, this is the opening of the Tangata Whenua Gallery in Otago Museum. If you go there, this is what you see. It's still there now. So this big po here, this is the big 5 foot one. These two figures here are twins. They sit in our legends. We have stories of the twins and one is killed. So that makes it very much our stories. We know these stories. We know these people. There was a little bit of a misunderstanding, but Dimitri Anson curated that and things weren't quite what he thought they should have been. Because some people went to say that these were theirs, and they got there and they said, these aren't ours. So he got himself cracking and wrote an article in the Polynesian Journal rectifying some mistakes. And I'm just going to show you this detail again, because sometimes the detail of these is the most fascinating thing. I can understand to Pākehā eyes they might have seemed, oh, we've got 61 of these, they all look the same. They're not all the same, they've got fascinating differences. So here, he's eating a lizard, and I take that to mean it's death. Death's coming. We've got these little figures that happen underneath and between legs. I don't know what they are, whether they're wives or children or whatever. We have ornate carving down the sides of power shell, fairies in each one. So, what's the detail? Dimitri took me around when I went down there for the first time and showed me the things that had come from there because they were sitting all over the place. This one's in the Dunedin Public Library, right upstairs on the top floor. And the librarian said, don't tell them we've got it. They think they've forgotten. They love it. Bad photographs. Dimitri also gave me 6 pages of photographs like this, but they're quite little and I have trouble peering at them. This is an unfinished one that's on display, and it's quite nice to see that you can get the feeling of how they carved them and the displaying of them, and I think that's a nice episode. And Rose Chapman went on holiday to Denmark, and I was like, Rose, if you're going to Denmark, would you go and do something for me? So she did a lot of talking to other people, and she got to see this one. It's the one lying down in front of Augustus Hamilton, but it wasn't easy to find. This is where Rose went. 40 k's out of Copenhagen she had to go to the storage room. Fortunately, she had a nephew who spoke Danish and could interpret for her. Getting to find these pieces is quite difficult. It's not like they're sitting there waiting at the door and you say, I'm Rose Morby. It doesn't work like that. I've been to see this one in Melbourne. That's in an off-site repository in Melbourne. They brought it out for me to see. And I said, can I have a photographer there? Oh, yes, we'll do that. And look what he turned out. It was hopeless. They were very hard to photograph, I'll give that. The size of them, you sort of need them flat. And Dimitri sat on ladders to photograph them. They are difficult. This is the one in Hawke's Bay now. And this is a lovely one because it's got lovely ornate carving. I don't know what's happening here, but I think that's fabulous. And there's another little face underneath there that's looking up. The detail is fantastic. My friend Heather Reed, her mother lives in Toronto, and I said to her, oh, do you think you could go to the Royal Ontario? Yes, she said. So off she went. She didn't know anything about Morrigan. Nothing. But off she went and talked to them. And she came home with some pictures, and she had a wonderful time in the back rooms. And they had these on display. So it was lovely. I thought I'd just show this. This is a storeroom in Te Papa. So these are some carvings here, and there are the Lindars at the back that Te Papa hold. Berkeley in San Francisco, I see that in 2 weeks' time. I'm excited about that. I'm just giving you some detail because when I went down to Dunedin, they've not really looked at the detail of them. This one here's an Otago, and when you get up close, you see two lizards here, and you see this is a woman. You see some carving on the face. Obviously, different tribes, different places. It's different either side of the face, giving a mother's and a father's lineage. So the detail in them is fantastic. And that's the Napier one again, with that little face looking up and his tongue in. I don't know what that means. Bishop Museum, Hawaii, they have two. Peabody Harvard, this was exciting for me because I knew there was one there. And when I went into their website and started emailing their curator there, she sent me a picture of two. I didn't know they had two, so suddenly from one I've got two there. And I see that in September too. Ngātua Rāia was the previous Māori curator of Otago, and she got snaffled up by Otago. She was at was the MTG. And anyway, I took her down there at her porphyry. And this photograph, of course, shows one here. But this character here is smoking a pipe too, which is quite interesting. Well, it looks like a pipe. I don't know what else it'll be. In Otago, this was the storeroom. I went down here. This is the manager of the storeroom. And lovely Māori woman on the left was the accountant. So she was thrilled to see it all. And she's Māori, but they're very pale down there. Those two pieces, they were both 18 feet long. They were the long barge boards. Now, this is a picture I've got, and if any of you went to the exhibition of Marion Maguire, this was one of her lithographs. And I got excited when I saw this, so I went to her and I said, "Where did you see this?" She said to me, "Otago." So she'd copied it and put it in this picture, and that was only within the last decade. But this actually depicts Heracles signing the Treaty of Waitangi, which we don't think that matches, but that's okay. And Victoria, of course, and the Māori chief. But she was very interested in classical vases and things like that. And she gave a wonderful talk how the most dominant piece in a picture is always on the left-hand side, which is why Victoria's there. And he might look magnificent, but he's already out of the picture because he's on the right. So this is the talk, where in the world is Heratonga? Well, I've got to 68 in all. 11 in America, 2 Canada, England. If my pennies stack up and everything, I'll get to see the European ones. Maybe not Copenhagen, can raise us like that. England, Scotland. There's one turned up 5 years ago in Tahiti, 2 in Hawaii. Australia has 5, and we've got 40 here. Some are in private collections. So it's the most scattered meeting house in the world. And you can probably guess what I'm doing. Trying to find them all, see them all, get photographed. But I just wanted to say that when you think into an English culture and you go into a stately house and you see up the staircases all those photographs of our ancestors, well, in Moridon we did the same. It's the bloodlines, but it's just in a meeting house and it's shared by everyone. So that's what we're doing. And thank you very much. And if you want to ask any questions, I'm happy to take them. That's left us done. Well, I know Augustus Hamilton bought 61. No, I know some were burnt after the Christchurch exhibition. My family sent more down then, and no. And the reason they didn't quite get completed and put up into a meeting house is they had trouble finding a barge board. The trees came from Rokawa, down the line, in the forest there.
So how large would this whare have been had it been put together, do you think?
At least 40 feet long. It's a long one. It's a major one. It's a time that, because Otago also had Matatua Wharenui down there. That was a major one. There were a few built about that time. In Maniapoto, they've got one, Te Tōpananui Anoko. That's a major, large one. We don't have a major one here, and that's what he was trying to achieve. Because poor old Karaitiani, you know, we were bruised here from the musket wars. Everything had been sort of decimated. And the previous Heratonga was up in Pakipaki above the hills there, Horonui.
I know there were lots of smaller family whānau groups within the area that sort of occupied different parts of it, but with this whare had been like a cathedral, might have been for early Europeans, a place for everyone?
Yes, I think so. Karaitiana means Christian, so he took the name Karaitiana. I think he wanted the name God, but they told him he couldn't be God.
But he did have three wives.
God got tricky around here. He spends a lot of time with Colenso. In fact, Colenso's mission station was just kui from where he was. When Colenso arrives here, he says that there is a whare built that can hold, Peter, how many people? Large, very large. They were waiting for Christianity to come. They were wanting all this. Karaitiana was very keen on this too. He wanted a big gathering place. If you want to know where it is now, it's under the Ngarororo River at the Chesterhoe Bridge.
The large carvings are 5 metres tall, which will give you an idea of just how big. It was meant to be the jewel in the crown for Heretonga. The walls were to tell all the great stories of the people. Rose and I can sit there looking at them, and some of them we can actually work out which stories they are. We had an interesting conversation asking Rose if she thought something was an eel, because it had this sort of hand thing, a sinuous shape. Rose said, I think they're seals. That would be Pānia. And of course it would be Pānia's story, because, you know, it's an integral part of the region is the story of Pānia.
Rose, do you think that any of these people could ever be repatriated to Hawke's Bay?
Well, Rose, it's always my wish. It isn't our treaty claim, and I'm led to believe that the New Zealand ones we can probably certainly get back. I think getting things from overseas museums will be very difficult. But, you know, it's a digital age now, and we're all up to date with the digital age. So we could get digital copies. Once we get them, we can start sort of putting the stories together. But unless you sort of see them quite close, you can't get the stories. They're very hard on those pictures, as you would have seen. It's my hope. It might not be my journey, though, Rose. Got to leave something for others to do.
Carvings were exchanged. Do you know what they exchanged for?
I hate to think. Maybe bows and arrows.
There was a craze in the Victorian era for Pacific art and artifacts.
They wanted Maori things. Augustus Hamilton had tried to bring in sort of set of parliamentary doorstep to try and stop people sending the artifacts out of the country, except it didn't seem to apply to the museums.
It's a way of funding a collection here to do an exchange, obviously, instead of cash.
There's a letter that Rose has, a chap, and it says, this is going to the Pacific Northwest in America. We've got some of the finest examples of Māori carving in New Zealand, which were these po. Would you like to swap them for some, I think it was Tilingata or something else, artefacts? So they had these things sent here. So, you know, one got quite a good profile overseas if you could swap all these fancy things.
I tell you, Napier swapped one in 57. It went to Pitt Rivers. That's the latest one I saw go. Extraordinary, isn't it?
Rose, when they were being cast originally, were they all cast on one side?
Yes, they would normally be carved on one side.
So where did they store them? They must have been enormous.
At Pākehā. Pākehā was quite a modern place by the 70s. It had, well, I pointed out the picket fence. They had two-storied houses that the Māori were living in there. They had the first school here. Karaitiana was a great believer in schools. In fact, he stood up in Parliament and he wanted every Māori taught English, which is quoted back to me quite often, that I'm the reason Māori don't speak English. I don't speak Māori because he wanted us to understand that. He was a man of enlightenment and wanted things differently. It was big. And I think it's the history of Hawke's Bay says that Pākehā would not be amiss in the main street of Auckland. It's so modern. This is in the 1860s and 70s. All gone now. We've gone backwards, mate.
Thank you, Rose. We've had lots of chats about your ancestor, Karaitiana. Occasionally I come across something at all, send it off to Rose about Karaitiana, so you're justifiably very, very proud of your ancestor. And I was just thinking, when you're doing your presentation, although possibly they had various motives when they did it, we look back now and think, what a terrible thing, but it's a bit like a European household where somebody comes in, takes all your treasures and just swaps in and exchanged them all over.
We've all got those stories. Yeah. Auntie so-and-so got that, and it should have been mine.
Yep. Yeah. So I know it's been a passion of yours for a long time, and it's really great to see you not be a shrinking violet and get up and tell your story, because I know you're very much a researcher in the background, so I'm very pleased that you're now speaking and even going to Washington and enlightening the Americans about Hiri Tonga. So thank you.
Thank you, Michael.